episode of I Never Shut Up Anyway. I'm Jenna Sowy, and this is my podcast. It has been, right now, as I am recording this, a month and a half since I've put out an episode. By the time this is out, it will probably be 2 months or so. I miss you guys so much. I'm so happy that we're back. Our guest today is mother and entrepreneur, owner of the Monster Stable, Farhadi. Stick around to hear my interview with her. But first, if you haven't already, make sure to follow me on social media, Instagram and Twitter, at Jenna Sowy, that is J-A-N-A-E-L-S-A-W-I, and our podcast's official Instagram page, I-N-S-U-A Podcast, that is I-N-S-U-A Podcast. Good morning!
Morning!
First of all, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good, how's it been? How's it been through quarantine?
Not bad. It was a little tough with a 2-year-old, but we survived.
She's adorable. I just saw her picture on your WhatsApp, and I was like, that's the cutest, mashallah, like the cutest baby ever.
Thank you.
Okay, so introduce yourself for our listeners who don't know you.
My name's Farhadi. I just turned 30 years old. Ooh. I have a 2-year-old daughter named Jalila, and I'm the founder and chef of the Monster's Table.
That's really cool. The Monster's Table is a business. It's one of those, how do you say it, takeaway businesses? Is that what you call it?
It's a like a digital platform, and we offer parents a solution. We offer parents healthy kids meals, whether be it breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, pasta sauces.
When I was looking through, when I first found your page, let's shout out the person who led me to you first. I found your page through this mother being on Instagram. I think her name's Noor.
Yeah.
She posted about it, I was like, that's really pretty. I'm going to check that
She's
out.
She's actually, I'm not really like an influencer kind of person. She is my favorite person on Instagram.
She is. Her Instagram page is the best thing ever.
She's such a nice person. I've met her in person. She's lovely, and her content is spot on and so needed in the society that we're in. Like, I feel like Egypt's so far behind, and I told her this before, she really makes me comfortable in knowing that she's changing the future, and my girl and her girl will grow up in a different environment than the ones we grew up in, to be honest. I'm such a huge fan.
I love what she's doing, especially right now, because it's very needed.
Yeah.
And I love how she's so unapologetic about it. She's like,
she's super unapologetic. You know, actually, what I like, when she feels like she's kind of overstepped, or someone, one of her followers brings something to her attention that she didn't see, she really does stand up there and takes, you know, responsibility and goes, you know what, yes, one of my followers pointed this out and you're right and I apologize. And I really respect her. She really is my favorite person right now.
Honestly, deserves, I wouldn't want to call her an influencer because that's just such a debunking of what she does.
Exactly.
But she's Instagram.
Exactly. That's why I put influencers in
quotes or like air quotes or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. But
I hope she hears this.
Yeah.
That's insane. I don't think she will, but if she does, okay. You have a 2-year-old. You just said that.
Yeah.
What was that like during a pandemic? I was really wondering about people who have babies. Like, what were you going through?
Yeah, no, not great. It was. Look, we started off on a good note. I had a plan. I obviously didn't know it was going to be like a 4 or 5 month, maybe even 6 months. I think we started mid-March, might have been like the 10th or the 11th of March. She had an event in her nursery, and then Thursday was off because we knew there was rain. It was going to be a rainy day, and she never went back. So it was probably most of March, April, May, June, July. I think July we started to be a little bit loose and went to Sahel, but it was 4 months of really being tough. We started out like arts and crafts. We all labina.
My sister's 5, and me and my mom mainly are like her She's stuck to both of our legs. Like, if my mom's not in the room, I have to be. And I love her.
I can imagine.
Yeah, and I love her. It's always been like this, and it's great. And all of my friends call me a teen mom. It's honestly not fun sometimes, but like, fine, okay. I do look like a teen mom, though. Everyone asks me if she's my kid, and I'm like, are you all okay? She's 5, and I'm 18. That's like impossible. But like, and she started off okay in the beginning, but then she started losing her mind. And then my sanity went, we repainted my balcony so she would shut up. Like, we bought a big paint bucket and the roller thingies, and we spread, like, I don't know what it is on the ground, and we just let her go ham.
No, I mean, we got bored. Can you imagine what a kid, like, especially my 2-year-old who doesn't understand what just happened. She's like, why are we suddenly stuck in this room? Why aren't we leaving? Like, I can so imagine what she went through.
And it's crazy kind of seeing them come out of it and also acting different around the world. Like, my sister's a little bit old, so she's aware of what, like, she knows that we need to sanitize. And then she's the first 2-3 times we went out, she was very like, don't touch me, what are you doing? And her social skills had went down.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a good thing. I'm really happy my 2-year-old didn't get that. I don't want her to be like the person that's scared to touch anyone or say hi to someone. Or I'm glad she doesn't know what happened. I hope this doesn't happen again, though.
I don't think they'll keep us at home. I think they might be another wave, but I don't think they'll make us stay.
I feel like we might do the herd immunity thing this time. I don't think anybody took the quarantine seriously. I don't think a lot of people took the quarantine seriously, to be fair. It was just one certain social class that was aware of it, and then everybody else just said
true. True. But like, then again, I think especially in Egypt there's a really big percentage of the population that's not educated enough to digest something like, oh, stay at home, you might get sick. And so we can't really blame them.
No, and I don't, and even the ones that did comprehend it, I don't think they could afford it, haram, which sucked for some people. I mean, I don't, especially people that have day-to-day wages, like that get paid day-to-day. It would have been really unfair to have these people that live on that money that comes in at the end of the day go sit at home because you might get sick. I mean, بالنسبالو, it's a lose-lose situation. I'm either going to die from corona or I'm going to die from starvation. So it's that would have sucked.
I think it's really important to kind of like, to kind of recognize your privilege. I've been saying it to a lot of my friends because I went through like roller coasters through the quarantine. So in the beginning I was like, I'm good, I'm okay, this is fine. And then like halfway through, I was kind of like,
I completely get it.
And then it was like, at least I can sit at home and still know that I'm going to be able to sleep at night and turn on an AC and wake up and have breakfast. Yes. And there are people who can't afford that.
I really think corona was a wake-up call for a lot of people. It really, like, a lot of people sat back and reflected and went, you know what, I'm really lucky. I mean, we don't live in an apartment. We have, we live in a duplex, so we have like a little garden. I really never understood it changed our lives during the quarantine. We were in that garden throughout the entire quarantine. I can't imagine my child being stuck in a room. I mean, that we were really lucky, really, really lucky. We bought bikes and we were biking all around the compound and stuff. Like, we began, you sit back and you reflect and you really take it all in and thank God really for your blessings. And we really, really were counting our blessings during the quarantine. I loved it.
That's so true.
I really didn't mind it. Other than my kid driving me crazy, it was really like a positive time for us.
But I think it also gave us me and my family, I have 2 siblings. My brother's 15, and he's in that age where he's just annoying for no reason. And my sister's 5, and then I'm 18, and then there are my parents. And we generally, we're very loud as like a family. And
like most Egyptians.
So much going on. True. But we never spend more than like 2 days in the house, and غير ما حد فينا يخرج مع بعض. So it really put us through like family therapy without paying for it.
Yes.
It changed
the same thing happened with us. That, oh, for sure. my daughter, since she was born, my husband was always working and stuff. She was more attached to me than him because he always leaves early morning, comes home like 6:30, and she sleeps at 7:30. So they didn't get much bonding time. Oh, they had a lot of bonding time. And not in a bad way. I mean, in an excellent way. He loved it. And so did she. She's now a lot more attached to her dad. Now that he's back in the office, she's always asking, "Mama, where's Dada? I want to go with Dada." And he keeps trying to explain that she's going to, that he's going to work and he's not going out. So,
and like, she's not going to comprehend that.
Yeah, no, it was good times. Good times.
That's really good. Honestly, there were really good aspects of quarantine. We have to, like, admit. It was a terrible thing, but, like, the upsides to it were plentiful, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so the monsters table. How did you come up with the concept? I've always seen a lot of pages do what you're doing, but just for normal food and for adults. When did you realize, oh, we need one for children?
I'll tell you, I've always been working, even when I was in school. Like, it was just a concept my dad taught us, like, you need to earn, just if we wanted extra stuff, we needed to earn it. So he always taught us that work was important. And so I was never like the sit-at-home kind of mom. I knew that that wasn't going to be me. Not that there's anything wrong with that. The way I was raised was so work-oriented that I couldn't imagine staying at home, even though staying at home is with a kid, specifically after quarantine. It's probably a stay-at-home mom. It's the toughest job out there. Can you hear my dog snoring?
No.
I got pregnant. I had Jalila. I'm super controlling. I like to know everything that's happening. I read 1,000,001 books while I was pregnant about pregnancy and blah blah blah. Backstory, I was a chef before that, or I'm was in the process of opening like a little bistro when I found out I was pregnant, so we kind of had to U-turn. So food and cooking was always my thing. And then someone gifted me this book, and it was about child nutrition and how to feed babies and stuff like that. And I was obsessed, and I thought, that's it, this is my thing. And when Jalila turned 6 months and we started her food journey, it was like two things that I absolutely love fixed in one. And I found out that it wasn't just about, you know, get a zucchini, chop it up and steam it and mash it and you're done. There's like this whole other world of every single week and every single stage of a kid's life, specifically during the first 2 years, is crucial to what kind of eater they're going to be later on. It's super important to get initially loads of iron in, because they're, most kids are iron deficient at that age, because after they stop breastfeeding and stuff. I was thinking, like, how do moms do this? How are you coping with dealing with your day-to-day life and this kid, and reading everything that this kid has to eat, and being very specific about their food and making it and chopping it and cleaning, and then cleaning after the mess? So I thought it was just a whole thing that would be super overwhelming. And I asked around, most moms were super overwhelmed as well with this, with the process. And I thought, I love food, this is what I wanted to do, and mixing both passions was great for me, and I thought, why not offer it to other parents?
When did you start the shop?
When Jalila was 6 months. So I had the idea initially before Jalila started to eat, because before I went through the journey, I knew that, wow, this is a lot deeper than I thought it would be. So I had the idea initially, but thought I wouldn't be able to juggle having the kid and running a startup. So I said I'll wait until she goes to nursery, and then I thought it would, I don't know, I took the risk and just shot out with it. I think Jalila was maybe 7-8 months old.
That's really good.
And it was tough, but we're growing and learning and developing new stuff every day.
That's really cool. I love, it's insane to me to have a baby and have a, like, I can't imagine what it's like to have a baby and then have something else to do other than the baby, like anything other than the baby.
Honestly, I every mom, if you can do it, do it. But heads up, it's a really tough journey. I mean, running a startup on its own is already like a roller coaster, let alone having a kid. And the problem with our culture, shwaya, I had a little bit of trouble when I had Jalila. I took her everywhere with me. So she went to all my meetings. I took her to all the factories, all the print presses that I went to. Like, I was literally the woman walking around with a baby all the time. Mm. And she was tiny. I wasn't really taken seriously, one, because I was a woman, two, because I was a woman with a baby, three, because I was doing something that nobody really understood. Like, the baby food market in Egypt is not really, there's nothing really out there.
It's not really a startup scene.
Yeah, not any scene, to be fair. I don't, other than the big brands that make the usual baby purees that you'll find on the supermarket, which, side note, are really unhealthy for kids. Other than that, there is no baby food market. So I wasn't taken seriously at all, and I kept pushing and pushing and pushing until I found one person that took me seriously, and we kept pushing forward from there. And yeah, we started off with a really homey small business that was, you know, just catering to my small circle, and it slowly grew. And and yeah, we have big things coming in October. We just rebranded. We have, I think, about 26 new products that we're launching.
That's really cool.
And they're all family-friendly meals, so anybody can eat them. So it's not just your five-year-old sister. It's probably your brother, you and your mom and your dad as well. Yeah. So it's been a tough journey, but we're getting there.
Okay, so did you have a job before?
My dad always jokes about me. The only thing I have left is the only field that I haven't been to is like the doctor, the medical field.
Yeah.
I've literally done everything you can imagine. I was a wedding planner for a year and a half. I wrote for a magazine for a year. I taught at a nursery for 1 year and then at a school for another. What else have I done? I initially started at an advertising agency for 3 to 4 months, and a desk job was not my thing. Mm. I went from the advertising agency to a chef at a hotel for a year and a half. Left that because it was really bad pay, but I loved it. That was my favorite experience ever, but it was really bad pay and I couldn't live on it. So I had to find a real job. So I taught at a school for a year and then moved to Egypt and taught at a nursery in Dubai. I was there for 25, 26 years.
Mm. Bro.
Yeah, yeah. Came back, taught at another nursery here for a year and then another school, and then wrote for a magazine, was a wedding planner, left that, went into a social media agency for a couple of months as well. And left that, and then and that's when I decided I was going to do like a little bistro. Got pregnant, had to scratch that as well, and now we have the Monster Stable.
That's really cool. So you didn't quit a job to start the Monster Stable is what I was asking.
No,
you quit a job to start a bistro and then you got pregnant.
Yeah.
Okay, but just in theory, if you had quit a job to start the Monster Stable, what advice would you give to someone with a small business on the side who still has a job and then wants to quit the job to focus on the small business?
Okay, I'll tell you, my husband's in that situation, by the way. My husband works for a company and he has his own little side business. The problem with that, and this is the discussion we both keep having, depends on your situation, obviously. If you have someone who's supporting you financially and you can afford to take the risk, quit everything and say, that's it, I'm going to do it and jump both feet in, definitely do that. You can never, I don't think you can juggle a side business. It's tough. I mean, specifically when you're working 9 to 5, you come home, all you want to do, as passionate as you can be about your side business, there's not enough hours in the day, unless you're going to be the person that doesn't sleep. If you can afford it, then jump 2 feet in if you believe in yourself and if you believe in your product. If you don't, and most people I know don't have the pleasure of you know, having financial supports from family or whatever, then really you need to, the 9 to 5 that you give yourself at work, you need to give yourself, you know, 5 to 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning. And you live on minimum sleep, but honestly, that's how I did it. I mean, with Jelly, it was a 24-hour job. It's not 9 to 5. It's literally 24 hours. But I pushed and it happened. And when you believe in yourself and you believe in your product and you're really passionate about what you do, you really will get there. And minimum sleep isn't so bad when you know you're doing something that you believe in. So,
but eventually you're going to quit. So you're going to like hold on to the hope of like, I'm going to quit my 9 to 5 job when this is stable enough to depend on. Which is, I think, fair enough.
Honestly, I don't know how stable something can be if you don't give it your all. You need to believe in yourself. It's gonna happen.
And that's the leap.
Honestly, I'm a true believer in the good guy always wins. Maybe not in the beginning, you'll win at the end. And hard work always pays off. It really always pays off. My dad was that person. My dad built himself from scratch, from nothing. And he worked and worked and worked and worked his behind off until he moved to Dubai, took me and my sister, gave us the best education that we possibly could. By himself, he had no help whatsoever. That man literally took the leap of his life. He had a wife and just me at the time and decided I'm going to go to Dubai and I'm going to work my behind off. He did got my mom and myself there, worked his behind off again to get me and my sister through the best schools. We had a really nice life and gave us everything. And that's why I was telling you, my sister and I were raised to really work hard because we watched him. Specifically my mom. My mom was a working mom with 2 kids with no help whatsoever in a country where she knew no one. So we had a good foundation, my sister and I. Like, we were taught that when you work hard, you'll get there.
I don't know if it's just me, but I feel like immigrant kids always have a way better work ethic than if they had just stayed in their countries. Even though you're not really, like, immigrating far away.
I think when you start off tough and you go through the tough... No story starts with, oh, I was so comfortable. And you know what I mean? If you look at anyone that's influential right now, I mean, I was telling my husband this the other day. This is why Donald Trump gets shit thrown at him all the time, is because he's a guy that's making money off of his dad's money. Oh, my dad gave me a $1 million loan. That's, nobody has that,
yeah.
You know? But when you look at someone like Oprah or Bill Gates or Steve Jobs, these are people that really had it rough in the beginning and they know what it means like to have nothing, and that's what pushes them forward. No story that's going to move you is going to start comfortable ever.
I was born rich. Okay, and what? We don't want
to
hear it.
Exactly. You're not going to care. What did you do to really get where you are? Nothing. You were born and you were there.
And you had it.
Yeah, exactly. You need to... I think rough and tumble is the way to go. Even if parents are comfortable enough. I mean, when we got to a certain age, my mom and dad were both working and they both... grew to a stage where maybe when we were around your age, a little bit younger, maybe your brother's age, my parents were a lot more comfortable than when we started off, but they still made sure to hold back certain things so that we'd still feel like stuff's not just thrown at you. You know what I mean?
And it's a really important thing, even if you are quote unquote rich, even if you have a certain amount of money, then that you can, like, I think
you need to hold back for sure.
Because if you have everything, nothing is going to mean anything, is what I think.
Sure.
Okay, so tell me about the food process. Do you make the food at home or do you have help? How do you have it done?
Okay, so I have no help whatsoever. I make everything myself. When my daughter started to go to nursery last September, I rented out a kitchen in Ma'adi that I turned into like this little factory. And that's where I work from. Make everything myself. I package everything myself. I send out everything myself. I have just Ustaz Talat, who is my delivery guy, who is a blessing that I depend on. He does all my deliveries and that's it.
So do you think that a part of the success of your store is that you have a kitchen that you go to that's not in your house? Like, do you think it would be this successful if you did it in your house?
Yeah, I think both. I don't think the place of the kitchen. Honestly, when I used to work from home, I was a little bit less focused because there were a lot of distractions. Like, I could go up and watch TV. I could take a nap if I wanted to. At the kitchen, it feels more work oriented, but you can do it from either.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's just a little bit more focused at the kitchen.
It's more like, this is where I work.
Exactly.
So obviously the majority of businesses were terribly affected by the pandemic. I thought that online businesses would completely flunk, but it had a moment in the beginning and then it was like, okay, yeah, we're good. Let's go forward. So how did you work through that?
They did really well. Online businesses did really well. Because there was no one in the street, like no one was going anywhere.
True.
And the ones that have access to online supermarkets and online stores, that I was buying useless things. Useless things. Like we bought stuff I don't think we've ever touched again during the quarantine. Anyone that was selling anything online, we were buying it. You know, yeah. It was me and my friends, like, just, it's, what'd you buy today?
How did you work through it as a business?
We took a real hit March, April, until mid-May. Everyone was worried. Like, moms were freaking out to get food from their kids in Borro. And then sometime around mid-May, moms woke up and went, these kids look like they're staying for a while. Khalas, let's just give in.
Mm.
And mid-May, we started to pick up again and work almost resumed as normal, yani.
Because I think everyone also في الأول was very لهوة. The media did a really great job at freaking us out.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, we're going to die. And then it slowly, it didn't fade, but it slowly was like, okay, I understand what I need to do to buy things and to live and to coexist with the virus. I don't need to completely isolate myself. I can stay at home and buy stuff and just sanitize it. So I think by the time people calmed down and realized that, it was mid-May. I was speaking to another person I was interviewing. She owns a beauty brand called Newbie. I don't know if the episode will be out before or after you, but she was saying that her business completely stopped for March and April, and then in May people were like, fine, let's,
you that's know, exactly that's what it. Happened with me, because people were freaking out in the beginning. Even me and my husband, we were freaking out in the beginning. Like, we wouldn't go to the supermarket. We'd have everything delivered to us. The guy would drop it at the door. We'd pay him from under the door, open the door, spray everything, leave it out there for like 2 hours. I think by like the second month, we're like, okay, how much do we owe you? Give me that.
Because I'm just going to wash my hands.
Yeah. It got too much. It looks like it's this thing we're going to live with. So all you can do is take caution and keep moving forward. Like, exactly. We're not going to live under a rock forever.
Okay, so I'm starting a ready-made business, okay? Say I'm starting a food, like a ready-made business. What advice would you give me? I still haven't started. I'm still doing my research, and I just need you to tell me, like, what are the tips that are going to make me succeed, quote-unquote.
Okay, so step one, it needs to be something you believe in or you can relate to in some sort of way. Like, I know a lot of people that just want to have startups right now because startups are their new thing, but if it's not something that you believe in your gut, you're not going to move forward, because startups are tough. So rule number one, definitely you need to have some sort of interest in whatever you're starting, right? Step two, think, and that's the mistake that I made and I learned the tough way, it's not always about what you think looks pretty or what you think looks nice or what you think tastes delicious. Mm. There, you're not selling it yourself, you're selling it to other people. So stick with your morals, but and make sure you're satisfied with what you're doing, but consider that there are other people, you're selling it to other people, so keep others in consideration. Three, don't spend money on stupid things. Like, I spent a lot more than I should on branding, مثلا. I loved our branding, but there I did a lot of things that didn't have purpose just because they looked cool. If it doesn't have a purpose, scratch it, come back to it later when you have the money. You don't need everything to be perfect in the beginning. People know that startups are going to be, you know, specifically early innovate, like the ones that catch products early that like startups are going to know that they're going to be like a little bit of bump. It's going to be a little bit bumpy in the beginning, and they like to watch the product grow. If you're perfect from the beginning, you're giving yourself no room to grow.
Absolutely. I've seen you also do like vegan, I can't remember what it was, but it was vegan something. And I haven't
We have a vegan bolognese.
Yeah, because I don't, there aren't many vegan products, like there isn't an array of vegan products from Austria, except in like, I'd say like specific food markets and the really expensive ones. Do you think that it's something that you want to expand, maybe have like an entire vegan section, or do you think that people don't really care?
I'll tell you something. A lot of our customers are foreigners, and most foreigners either, you know, they eat a lot different than us. So a lot of them are vegan. Some of them are dairy free. Some of them are only vegetarian. So I try to give, when you put our products down, I try to have an equal amount of everything so that everybody has an option, you know. I don't know if I'll have a whole section for vegans, because we don't really have, like, culturally, it's not really our thing. But I don't know if we have a lot of vegans in Egypt, so I don't think I'll make a whole section for vegans. But definitely, I'll always have a few products in there for the vegans.
Dairy-free products, I think, would sell a lot better, because there are a lot of people who are lactose intolerant, especially kids.
For sure. We have a lot of dairy-free products.
Yeah.
A lot.
I don't know what it is that everyone I know who's lactose intolerant just doesn't care. They just don't care.
Health-wise, I think you should really listen to your body. Like, if you're eating something and it's, like, making you gassy or making you uncomfortable or giving you diarrhea or giving you pimples or giving you eczema or any of that, you really should just listen to your body. Your body is going to tell you everything you need. When you're tired, you'll feel like you're thirsty. You know, if you've been like sweating and running, and your body will tell you that you're thirsty. The same goes with food. Your body will tell you if you've eaten something that it likes and that it can digest or not. If my husband loves meat, he really has a problem digesting meat. His stomach just doesn't take it. It doesn't like it, but he loves it. I keep telling him, listen to your body. Every time you eat meat, you get uncomfortable. Don't eat it. He loves it. He loves it. He doesn't listen to his body. You don't need an expert or a doctor to tell you that you're allergic to something.
You don't have to be allergic to it. Some things just make you, hurt your
just
stomach.
Just uncomfortable. Exactly.
The first thing that comes to my head when I think of a mom-owned business, I was thinking of the questions, and sometimes when I'm thinking of questions, I'm going to tell you my secret. I kind of go on the internet and view other interviews that are similar and see what are like the most asked questions, and then try to find something else so it's not like repetitive. And a lot of the questions that I found when I was looking at mom entrepreneurs were, how do you deal with your work and your baby? Do you feel guilty about having a job? Do you feel blah, 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 blah? And I was like, God damn it. Let women live. I know that especially if Masra, like, when I am an 18-year-old girl and I get all of this sexism about my careers and my aspirations, and I'm not in any relationship whatsoever, and I do not have a kid. Let me just make that clear. What's it like? First of all, how does it make you feel? Because it makes me feel angry.
Okay, this is a super sensitive topic for me. Being one, a woman, is already tough in this country. Two, being a mom it's ridiculous. My advice, without getting into too many details, and this is advice for any sex, male or female, honest to God, people love the wrong people, those types of people, love to find shit to pick on. If I don't have house help, Ida, you don't have house help? How can you not have house help? When do you have time for yourself? If I have house help, oh, you have house help and you depend on your house help and you don't do anything yourself. If I go to work, I'm setting a bad example for my daughter and I'm neglecting my daughter. If I don't go to work, I'm setting a bad example because I'm not showing my daughter that women should... It's someone's... Those types of people are always going to find a way to find the thing that you're doing wrong and they're going to bring it out. In Anna, I told you I was raised in Dubai my whole life. I've only lived here for about 4 or 5 years. In one ear, out the other, it works. I never, ever, ever let it get to me. And I just... To be fair, I have a really supportive husband. Really supportive husband. So many days he's taken... He takes days off from work to sit with my daughter so that I can go and... Like, if I have a meeting or something and I obviously can't take Jelly with me, he takes days off from work and he stays. He comes home from work when I have, like, a pile of orders, super tired, takes off his shirt, puts on comfy outfits, and comes and helps me in the kitchen with all my orders. He's super, super supportive. So it really helps because I don't ever hear that stuff from him. But... my advice to women that do get shit from their mother-in-laws or their mothers or their husbands, really, if it's your mother-in-law, in one ear, out the other, you're never going to win with her. If it's your mom, and very rarely do I hear moms say that to their daughters, because apple doesn't fall very far away from the tree. Like, my mom was super working, super hard working. She taught me and my sister to be like that. My sister has her own branding agency. She's, I think, 26, maybe she's turning 27. She's been independently working for 2 or 3 years, worked straight out of uni. So we're just raised like that. If it's your husband, show him. Give him one day. Like, if he's giving you shit about the kid and working, make him sit down and have the kid for one full day and see how it feels like. And he'll appreciate, you know, the effort that you put to look normal and survive throughout the day.
And still be a sane human being.
Really, just in one ear, out the other. Never, never, never let that stuff get you. Completely ignore it. Specifically, if you believe in yourself, it'd be a lot easier. I don't feel like I neglect my daughter at all. Bilhax, to be fair, I feel like because I appreciate completely what my parents did for me and the foundation that they gave me and my sister. And it's no fluke that me and my sister are both like that. We're both hardworking. We're both dedicated. We know how to balance our life. So I want to give my daughter the same thing. I want my daughter to know that she needs to be hardworking. Things don't get thrown at you in life. You really need to work hard to get them. And I never raised my daughter based on gender. If I had a boy, I'd raise him the same way.
What I'm really excited about, thank you for bringing that up. What I'm really excited about in the next, I want to say, 10, 20 years, is seeing, I don't think we can say that we're in, like, the same boat, because by the time I have kids, your daughter's probably going to be, like, 12 or 13, but I'm really excited to see the kids that we raise with this mindset, because I think it's going to push this country, especially, like,
for sure,
10 years forward.
Can I tell you something? There's a certain social class, Keda, الغلبان شوية بجد الست هي اللي مقومة البيت. I don't know why we're talking about women in the work field like it's something that's new. That social class lives on women that are working. Most of the people you look at, الست هي اللي مقومة البيت in that social class. Maybe in our social class we have the comfort of women laying back and taking a break because their men are doing all the jobs for them. Thank God it's changing. And still, it needs to be a choice. There, if it, you can't be criticized on if you're going to work and if you're not going to work. It's a
choice. Because some women actually need to work. How? Why don't we consider that people's financial situations aren't similar? What if I am in a relationship where my significant other needs me to work because we just can't live on only his pay?
You know, and that's exactly how my sister and I were raised. We were raised in a family where, even though my dad was a little bit more traditional, he didn't understand when my mom said, "I'm gonna start working and I'm gonna help out so that we can give the kids the best schooling ever, so that we can give them a good foundation to move forward." My dad was ما فيش ست بتصرف على البيت and stuff, because he was a bit traditional. After much discussion, he leaned towards, yes, you're right. And that's what I loved as well, that my parents were very open to debate. ما فيش حاجة اسمها أصلا أنا قلت كده وأنا الراجل وانتي ست وانت. There's very, and my dad was traditional. There was a conversation, and there's always a debate about things, and there's always like just a good foundation on how things develop and how things move forward. My they had a discussion. My mom convinced him that if you put two paychecks together, we can get a better school. So he said, "Oh, good idea. Let's do that."
You know. At the end of the day, he just wants what's best for you.
And when my husband and I got married, that's how it was. I mean, when my business grows to the point where I can make a right now, all the money that's going into the business, all the money that's coming out of the business is going back into the business again so that we can grow. So I'm not really participating with the house. But if we reach a point, and my husband and I have already had that discussion, where the business can come out with financials that can really make a difference in our lives, that's definitely open to happen. Who says that only a man? That's too much pressure on men. You know, we've been focusing too much on women and going sexism, 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 and we forget men. They are under so much pressure all the time, and society expects so many things from them. So just like it's tough on us, it really is tough on them as well.
That is absolutely what I've been saying for literally the past 3 months, ever since the womanhood movement began. I was like, yeah. The men that are arguing and that are like, no, you need to stay in your place. I'm like, just listen, this is to help you too. Like, why are you so insistent on putting so yes. much emotional and mental burden on yourself to be the okay, if you and your wife agree that you're going to be the one who's working and that she's not going to be working, that's completely fine. That is your choice. But don't put the pressure on yourself to be the person who's always strong. If there's, especially in like big, for example, when someone passes away in the family, there's so much pressure on men to like not cry and not yes. show that there's... You're a human yes. being. You're supposed to let yourself feel these things.
Honestly, my friends that have boys are really raising their boys to be, for lack of a better word, normal. Cry if you need to cry. And مش عارفة, we need to reach a point where everybody talks about equality, like we have to push men down so that women can go up. لا, equality is both of us happy in a point where ولا احنا هنا ولا احنا هنا كلنا. It's just equal in the sense that they're happy and we're happy. We're not going to get equality by pushing them down, and then that's not going to happen.
And I don't want to do that. Men are important. They're an important part of society. They're crucial.
Of course, who can live with... I'm telling you, I would have not at all been able to do anything from what I'm doing right now if I didn't have my husband. He feeds Jelly. He takes the night shift all the time. And he doesn't call it babysitting, right?
It's not babysitting.
We're splitting duties, right? Because we made this kid together and we're splitting her duties. When he's at home, he's available to do more things. When he's at work, obviously, he can't do anything about it. But when he's here, because he showers her, he changes her diaper, he knows how to feed her, he did everything since the day that she was born, except for breastfeed, because he physically can't, you know? But he literally did everything else. And all men should be like that. If you have the time, you should participate.
Because at the end of the day, I think it negatively affects them as fathers with their relationships and their children.
Of course.
Your kid's not going to... You love your dad because he's your dad. And everyone loves their dad because they're their dad, even if they're shit dads. But there's a reason that everyone is way more attached to their mothers, and it's not just because that we were breastfed. Yeah. Everyone thinks they're like, oh yeah, you're attached to your mom because she breastfed you. I was no, one.
It's because she did most of the work.
I don't know that she breastfed. If you didn't tell me, I wouldn't know. It's because she was present. It's about the presence.
Yes, yes.
I always ask my guests to shout out three or more creatives, someone who makes something, anything. They could be literally your colleague, but just someone who deserves recognition.
Okay, so my sister for sure, because she really is badass. She has a branding agency called Ants and Elephants.
Can we find her on any social media?
Yeah, she's on Instagram. It's ae.branding. So it's Ants. Look for Ants and Elephants, you'll find her. There's a local girl called Nihel that does plates, like these bamboo wooden plates for kids, and I've always bought them from abroad. I would have loved, and I made a pact starting 2020 that I'd only buy local, and I was really feeling guilty because my daughter loves these plates. They come in like shapes of animals and stuff, and I really was trying to buy them local and I couldn't find them, and she just launched like I think 2-3 days ago. The company is called The Little Foodster, or Little Foodster without the. And the girl's called Nihel. Ooh, I love her. Super hardworking. We had a conversation about a couple of days ago. Super hardworking. Really pushes herself forward. She's a mother of twins.
Bro.
And she's running a little company. And Masona, Wines, and everything's perfect down to every detail. Yeah, definitely shout out to her. Ooh, Rue Baby.
What's that?
I love them. They make sleep suits and undershirts and shirts for kids from 100% Egyptian cotton.
That's really cool. Bring Egyptian cotton back.
I love local businesses. We've been purely local since 2020 started, and I love it. Honestly, there's certain things where I feel like, okay, that's lacking. Just doesn't exist in the market. But the things that do exist are really up to par. Really up to par. I'm starting to be really impressed with Egyptian, like locally made things. Yes.
Okay. Where can our listeners find you?
So we have a website, themonsterstable.com. We're also on Instagram and on Facebook.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being on. I had so much fun. I love you. You're so badass.
Thank you, Jenna.